just a quick warning that we're going to be talking about death, birth, life, abortion, loss of fetuses, patriarchy, existentialism. I don't know if I said that already, but all sorts of potentially heavy shit, also clitorises. So if you're not in the right headspace for that, maybe just skip these next few episodes. He's the pain of birth.
Diverse again. We're gonna talk about lyrics.
We're actually getting into the lyrics this week. We promise. I'm Nikki. Welcome. We're so happy that you've tuned in with us.
Yes, welcome. We're happy to have you. Cozy up or put on your headphones. Let's go for a walk.
Sam, this week I fantasized so much, not because I even want this to happen, but just like exploring the possibility in my mind. I was just like fantasizing about interviewing Joanna Newsom on this podcast and just like talking to her with you and and exploring the different ways that that could go in my mind. Sam was like cringing, shuddering, putting her hoodie up over her head, like but I was thinking about it.
Okay, follow-up question. What would you say?
Dude, I couldn't figure that part out. That was the hardest part of my fantasy. Was like, well, how do I talk to her? Yeah, that's tricky. In one of the iterations of these fantasies, it was because she had released a new album. And so I was thinking about all the process questions I wanted to ask her. Like, I want to know, like, does she carry a notebook with her all the time and just jot these things down? Or does her memory
What does your facilitate? Research room look like? Do you... Yes. Because in my imagination, it is – we're going to not talk about the lyrics again this episode. Here we go. In my imagination, it's like a library, like a Belle from Beauty and the Beast library.
Yes.
Papers everywhere and maps and images and art and like obviously a computer because we have to be Googling things. But like this very like classical, like really – beautiful version of research, but it might also not be that. It might just be
like a messy Google Doc. Like,
yes, it might be like ours.
Exactly. So yeah, I would want to ask her about process stuff, and then obviously there'd be a bunch of specific questions about the new album that's gonna eventually be released in our dreams.
Yeah.
But because I didn't know those specific questions to fantasize about, I was thinking about process questions.
What would you ask about? I think I would ask about like the jumping off point. Like what was the jumping off point? What started the theme for each of the albums? So what made you start thinking about Divers and what like spread into all the different ivy leaves that makes up the entire album? Same for everything else. Like what did you learn about Lola Montez? And then you were like, here's an album.
Here's an album, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. I want to know that too. Yeah, so stay tuned. Just kidding. Now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Or maybe not.
Or maybe not at all. The re-delving into the lyrics, picking up with where we left off in episode 2, which is the third verse of this song.
Okay. You want to read it?
No, I want you to read it.
Okay. And we're starting with I Know We Must Abide, right?
Yes.
Okay. Here we go. She sings. I know we must abide, each by the rules that bind us here. The divers and the sailors and the women on the pier. But how do you choose your form? How do you choose your name? How do you choose your life? How do you choose the time you must exhale and kick and rise? Ooh, it's so good.
Oh, it's so good. Also, I don't know what's happening. Okay. Where do we start? We have abiding by rules, which I think is – this is like the most – kind of explicit statement that we get that confirms, I think, Melissa Martirano's reading of this that we've talked about, where women are bound to the shore, men are free to go out and do the exploring, and like there are a set of rules that govern each kind of behavior. So I like the potential gender statement right from the get-go.
Abide also has a few different meanings, and it makes me wonder if she, the artist, just spends time in a dictionary, because abide can mean to – it's perfect. To put up with, tolerate, to endure, to wait patiently for, and to remain in a place.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
I know. Google defined. Thank you. Or – to conform, to abide by. Is that what the lyric is? We must abide each by. Okay. To abide by is to conform to comply with.
I love the idea that it can also mean to wait, because, oh my God, our poor narrator is just waiting. She's abiding in multiple ways. I love that. That's super cool. So,
and to abide in a particular place, that we have that like sticking you to a spot on a map.
Yes.
And that spot we're going to stick you to in our perspective is land.
Totally. One thing right from the get-go that throws a wrench, or maybe not throws a wrench in, but like that raises some, like makes some question marks pop up all over my head. Not an eloquent way of putting that, but whatever. is that It doesn't seem to be just gender, maybe, that's going on here, but I mean, it never is, but because on the lyrics on Genius, at least, there is a colon that comes after bind us here. So I know we must abide each by the rules that bind us here, colon, the divers and the sailors and the women on the pier. And so that implies that each of those categories of people is being bound to like a different sort of spot. We have on the shore, on the water, and in the water. Mm-hmm. And we know that the women are on the pier, are not in the water. We know that the divers are in the water. What are the sailors up to? Are they on the water? Are they in the sky?
Oh, I guess it could be either. When you first said it, I was like, okay, so women are on land, ostensibly still. They are not touching the water. We cannot say they are on the water. So right. They don't have access to the water. Divers are in the water, and sailors are kind of in that middle space.
Yeah.
Right? Like they don't have access to the depths of water, and they don't necessarily have like access to like the reaches of the inland, but they're kind of stuck in between.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Genius annotation for this first part is the narrator in this song belongs to the last category of people, the women on the pier. She acknowledges that each of them is governed by a set of social roles. This song is a tale of unrequited love on behalf of the narrator, and because she is a woman, she is bound by a rule that keeps her from pursuing the diver. She must ever hold her breath till she may be the diver's wife. Alternately, the sailors could be those mentioned in Waltz of the 101st Lightborn, who seek to colonize time. The divers are those who dwell in the past instead of living in the present. I thought the sailors from Waltz is interesting. And then Gone underscore 18ZTT underscore 5562, 7 years ago, responded to that with the following comment. In recent interviews about the album, Newsom discussed how she's interested in the line, literal and metaphorical, between the sea and the sky. The lyric describes those below the line, the divers, those above it, on the rising and ebbing tides, the sailors, and those who are anchored to the line itself, the women on the pier. In this reckoning, the women on the pier are much less passive than it might first read. They are the ones who can see what goes on above and below, and thereby they have a better idea of the bigger picture, the grander scope of events. I hadn't read that before this moment right now, but I love that, and it goes back to what we were talking about last episode. Oh, and then 5 years ago, I responded to that comment, so I guess I had read it at some point before.
That's so funny.
All right.
Good job, past Nikki. I like what you read about the past, present, and future something.
Oh,
there.
Okay.
The divers were in the past. Sailors are kind of this in-between and women on the pier. Only because I hadn't thought about it that way. And it's like a matching three theme.
Yeah. Yeah.
It also makes me wonder, we haven't mentioned sailors, at least not in this song, right? So that's just like an interesting new perspective to all of our like very, dichotomous like discussion so far. So we've talked a lot, especially last episode, about the difference between divers and women on the pier.
Yeah.
But what about the sailors?
Yeah. What about the sailors?
Who is thinking about the sailors?
Yes.
Not us.
I mean, that's, I think, an excellent question. And it also, to the person on Genius here who linked the sailors to Waltz, that goes hand in hand with the chiasmus that Melissa Martirano wrote about on Blessing All the Birds, which is like the mirroring of themes between Waltz of the 101st Lightborn and Divers, as both being on either sides of the middle song of Divers, which is The Things I Say. And I think towards the end of Waltz, we have the mention of sailors. I think it's Neath the Sky where our sailors have gone. And so we have this image of sailors having gone up into the sky. She uses the specific word sailors there. And so I love the idea that might be tying back to that theme. But yeah, who are these sailors? I don't know.
I mean, I don't understand this part. The lyrics describe those below the line. So, sorry, we're talking about. Oh, boy. Ham on ham. We're conferencing. She's interested in the line, literal and metaphorical, between the sea and sky. Okay, so that's the line. The divers are above it.
No, the divers are below it.
The divers are below it, this literal and metaphorical line between the sea and sky. These sailors
are above it.
Are above it. And then the women on the pier are anchored to it. I just have a hard time visualizing that.
Yeah, no, that is kind of confusing because the pier is technically on top of the water too. Like if the sailors are on the water, then like the pier is just as much on the water as the boats are.
Don't understand. They go on to say that women are the ones who can see what goes on below and above.
Yeah.
I don't get that.
Because they can't really see what's going on below.
And they can't really see what's going on above.
Yeah, like, interesting. I don't.
It's a beautiful idea.
It is a beautiful idea. I do really love that idea.
And I like the idea that it gives women a little bit more agency if they are able to see above and below.
Yes.
But I also feel like maybe the ones who see what go on above and below are the sailors.
Yeah.
Because they're more transient. They're more able to like dip their toes in the water, but also dock on land. I don't know.
If the sailors are related to the Waltz sailors and they're sailors of the sky, then maybe yes. I can make a little bit more sense of how the woman on the pier has more access to both. Because imagine what the sailor in the sky can see. They might be able to see the woman on the pier from the sky, but they probably can't see into the water. Whereas imagine what the diver can see. Maybe he can look up and see the woman on the pier, but probably can't see up into the sky. But the woman can at least, in like a limited sense still, but can it still at least, I can at least picture like the idea that she can look down into the water and she can see the diver, even though like if he goes deep enough, he'll be out of sight. And then she can look up into the sky and see both. And so she has this privileged perspective in the sense that she can see each of them as long as they don't go too deeply into their respective domains.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And then it just kind of highlights the limitations of each of them, right? That there is some shared perspective, but there's also like you said, a depth to each of their diving, their respective diving that the others just can't yeah. can't access.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I love too that like the gender of the sailors is a little bit in question. Like the divers and the sailors, maybe it's just like men doing the diving, men doing the sailing, and then the women on the pier. But I don't yeah. know.
No, it's yeah. a distinction for sure.
Yeah.
And it's also like, it gives each of them a role, right? Like we have the diver and the sailors are defined by their role. And then are women too? Like, is the role that you are a woman?
Right.
As it is the role that you are a sailor and a diver. Because it's not the men who dive, the women who sail.
I love that point, Sam. Yeah. That like their adventuring defines them as a person, at least societally, in a way that women women have to just be women, and like that's their job is to like drape themselves in nacre and like watch and like stay and wait, whereas the other people get defined by what they do, like by their profession rather than by like their identity.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Very, very good point. I love that.
Okay, where do we go from there?
Well, the trouble is that this last half of the verse vexes me. Vexes me. I don't know what's going on.
Vexes makes me think of vexes me completely, and then it just makes me excited for Milk-Eyed Mender, which
does Vex,
is a banger.
Does vexed have an angry connotation? Let's just see. Of a problem or issue, difficult confused. And much debated. Yeah, okay. No, yes. I meant it in the confused way. It confuses me. A different definition, too, is that you can be annoyed, frustrated, or worried. I'm not annoyed with it. I'm just confused by it, to be clear. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Before we move on to the second half, I just wanted to talk about bind. Because, and this might be wrong, but when I think about bind as a word and her music, the thing that jumps out to me is the ties that bind, they are barbed and spined and hold us close forever. So it makes me wonder what kind of rules are binding us here.
Mm-hmm.
And what are those rules made of? Like how tight are they? How secure are they? How much movement do we have within them? How restricting are they really? How much movement are we allowed within the confines of those rules?
Excellent question. And I hadn't focused on the word bind before, but that's super interesting, especially because it's bind us and not bind me, right? So like she is giving the impression then that the men too, although they're free to explore, they're bound to the pull to explore in a way that might be comparable, at least to some extent. I'm not saying that they're oppressed by their need to explore and like have the power, but that they're still compelled to do those things in a way that is related to the way that women are bound to the shore, maybe.
And I do very much agree with you that each by the rules that bind us here, and then we have three categories of rules. So that to me means that there are rules for each of those rules. So divers have their own explicit and bound set of rules. Sailors have their own explicit and bound set of rules, as do women. And they're probably different.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Each by the rules that bind us. Yeah, but yeah, maybe not. Maybe the rules are like the rules of nature, which are like, we live in these like corporeal bodies and are bound to earth and to time and the experiencing of time in a way that's like an illusion. And, you know,
I love that. But then also that each of these roles assign us certain responsibilities as well, right?
Yes.
So like we said, women are bound to the earth. sailors are bound to that space between land and water and sky, whatever the genius annotation was. And divers have, like, that they also have their own space assigned to them too, right? Space and time. Can we also assign time to them? Okay.
Yes. So when you were talking before, I meant to say this. When you were saying before how you liked the, like, the past, present, future linking of those places, I was like, oh shit, yeah, because then that also spatializes time in a way that we've seen throughout this album, which is like that time and space are actually just one, and that, again, we have these, like, profound illusions about what – about the nature of time. So I liked that theme that maybe – yeah, that maybe each of them represent a different, like, form that time can take, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of form, how do you choose your form?
Oh, for fuck's sake. Wait, before we get into that, I'm sorry. That's too – it's too hard for me for the moment. I also just had this one thought that I wanted to reemphasize.
Ease into it.
Yeah, we need to ease into it. I said this on the last episode, I think, but I just this – the word peer made me just think again to mention Rachel Parent had this thought. I think it was Rachel on Blessing All the Birds, where she was saying that, like, this song is very much concerned with the division between men and women and then the division between sea and shore, but also on the attempts to bridge that division, to, like, close that gap. And she mentioned the pier as being one of the ways that humans – that we've tried to, like, bridge that gap. And so if there's a theme in this song of, like, trying to understand why men are the way that they are, to try to understand why women are the way that they are, and, like, try to, like, connect via our shared experience of being human, our shared experience of being subject to time, that this might be just, like, a mention of one of those ways, like, we put up piers so that we're able to go out onto the water a little bit more, get a little bit more understanding of the other.
Yeah, that it extends our space, yes. But it also extends our understanding a little bit.
Yes, exactly.
But then it's also like, who is building the pier, right? Yeah. Is it women that are extending that, that, like, physicality of space? Is it? It must be, right? So then, well, what would the comparison be for divers? What's the diver's pier? Is it a boat? Is it?
Yeah.
If there is one, I don't know.
I don't know either. Even, like, yeah, I don't know. I was gonna say, like, even the waves lapping up on the shore, like, or, like, and, like, the tide rising, like, there's, like, this, like, overlap happening, even if it's not an intentional trying to bridge the divide. But yeah, we're talking about the intentional ways of trying to bridge the divide. So I don't know. Maybe it's not then just the women who make the pier. I don't know who it is who's trying to bridge the divide, but the attempt is there at least. The image of, like, trying to get closer to a different understanding is at least maybe there.
Yeah. No, I like that a lot.
Okay. I suppose we get into this very tricky part. For me, tricky. I don't know.
It is tricky because what are we talking about?
Well, yeah. That's the thing. It feels like the subject of what we're talking about, if not shifts, like, reveals itself in a way that makes it hard to talk about, or, like, that confuses me.
Okay, so our first question is, and we start with but how do you choose your form? Okay, are we referencing the forms that are given to us the line before? Is it the divers, the sailors, and the women on the pier? Are those the three forms, or is it something different?
Yeah, who the fuck knows? That's a great question.
And then,
and
I
why
feel like,
why is it but?
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I knew we must abide each by the rules that bind us here. That I was going to say, are we building on the question? So I feel like it's this big thing that's like, how do you choose your form? Then I feel like she's like, how do you choose anything? How do you choose your name? How do you choose your life? How do you choose the time? You must exhale and kick and rise. Like, how do you choose anything?
That
feels very much to me like a throwing your hands up. Like, I don't know.
Yes.
How much choice do we really have in any of this? You can't choose your form, right?
So, like, this is the thing. what is she talking about? At what point do we get to choose our form and our name and our life? Like, all these things very much feel like they weren't choices. And so I think maybe that's part of what makes these questions so confusing for me is like, wait, what? Why is the answer not never? We don't choose any of this. Is there a perspective that I'm missing here that like maybe like as maybe she's referencing like, you know how in anecdotes we talked about how there is like the bird spirits waiting to like dive down into human bodies and like go live lives as humans. But before they do that, they're like more spiritual than they are like individuals or like bodied creatures. Mm-hmm. So maybe she's talking about not in our experiences as humans, but like rather our spirits in this, in the bird sense, in like the place before death and life sense. That like those people, those spirits are the ones that are doing the choosing. And so she's asking these like more removed, these more abstracted questions from our individual experiences.
But do you get a choice as that like spiritual bird form? Do you get like a menu of like, do you want to be a diver? Do you want to be a sailor? Do you want to be a woman on the pier? What do you want your name to be? What do you want your life to be? I don't know.
Yeah.
No, go.
I was just going to say, maybe that's what she's asking. I mean, maybe she doesn't have an answer to that either, but maybe she's like, how did this all come to be? Like, did we choose? Maybe that's it. Like, the way that they're phrased makes it seem like that there's a choice is assumed, but maybe it's rather that she's confused about it and just like trying to suss these questions out for herself.
And I think we get that with the last line, right? How do you choose the time you must exhale and kick and rise? If we're talking about someone holding their breath and diving, it isn't a choice, right? It's your body telling you you need fucking air right now. So it's not even really a choice. Although, I guess the choice then would be life or death, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you choose to keep living, this is the time that you must finally let go of that breath and shoot yourself back to the surface.
Well, yeah, this the last question too, I find, I mean, exceedingly beautiful, but also exceedingly confusing because it seems to me like here we might be getting this image of like birth happening from water, from inside of water, right? Where like the choosing the time to exhale and kick and rise is being born in the context of these questions, right? Because she's talking about like these, like, how do we choose our life? How do we choose our name? How do we choose the form that we're going to take in this life? How do we choose the time that we're going to exhale and like kick and rise to the surface and become that like embodied person, on one interpretation at least? And so that's obviously being, if that's onto something, that then is obviously being contrasted or compared with the way that the diver chooses to rise to the surface at some point too. And then maybe that's contrasted further with the birds diving down and onto the surface level, to the middle level there, the middle line, and embodying these human spirits, again, as the way that we saw in anecdotes. And so we get like coming from the sky down to the earth as a way of being born. We have coming from the depths of the ocean up to the surface as a way of being born. And it seems as though like the living of a human life happens on that line that divides the sky from the water. I don't fucking know, man.
I also do not know.
Oh, it's hard.
But I appreciate your passion. I didn't think of it as with that metaphor of life. So I very much appreciate that idea that like the kicking and rising is like the taking of your first breath, or you like becoming the form you will be. I hadn't thought of that. So I do like that.
Because there is something a little birthy too, not just in, like, so the first birthy context that I was maybe thinking was here was like just in the context of these bigger questions being asked, like how do you choose when to become a thing, but also just like the imagery of exhaling and kicking in particular, like babies kicking and babies like crying as their first, like their first breath is like a, I don't know. Or maybe exhaling and kicking and rise is dying. Where we like rise up into the back into the sky. Maybe it's the opposite of being born.
And in that same question, how do you choose the time that you let go of that last breath, that you.
Right. And maybe the questions are like the same. They're like very, you know, very similar questions. Yeah.
I think so. And I think we don't really get a choice in any of this, right? Like, I think to me, that's what the second half of this verse is, that these are all questions that like don't have an answer because we don't know if you choose your form, your name, or your life. Like, we just don't.
Yeah. And the way that this last half of the verse is contrasted with the first half of this verse also confuses me a bit. So I know we have to abide by these rules, but how do we choose the form that we're going to take that will then dictate what rules we have to abide by? Like, I'm not sure if I understand why there's a but at the beginning of that, the posing of questions.
I think it ties it together, right? So, I mean, I think my theory is that it's asking us to choose one of these three forms that we've explored just above. So how do you choose to be either a diver, a sailor, or a woman on the pier? Furthermore, how do you choose your name? How do you choose what your life will look like within those clearly defined roles? Mm-hmm. And then how do you choose maybe when you die?
Yeah. Okay, I like that.
I don't love it.
How do you choose your form? Also, maybe the form is like maybe like you could have been a horse too, like a horse or a bird or a whale or whatever. And then also we get naming here, and we love talking about Joanna Newsom and naming, and it's important.
God, do I love it.
Yeah. And so I love the explicit talking about implying the ways in which naming can, so I guess it's not explicit if it's implied, but I love the idea that naming can inform what our lives will look like. And so what we are named, do you remember the idea well enough to be able to articulate it? Like, I feel like it first came up in Colleen, maybe, when we were talking about the person who finds Colleen washed up on the shore, saying like, she's describing that person finding her and saying that her name will be Colleen, like naming her, having this sort of power. And so the woman or the people who find her washed up on the shore, like, get to determine something about her by giving her a name. And remember that Colleen means woman in, I think, Gaelic. And so it's just like this explicit, like in that song, this explicit condemning the person to like abide by gender roles in a way that we might be seeing here.
Yeah, I have my notes open, and we did cite this exact verse when we were talking about Colleen, because we were referencing the piece by Melissa Marchewano, Blessing All the Birds. Mm. But also we talked about exactly that. We asked questions like, was there ever a name? Did Colleen have a name? We talked about pre-Colleen. Mm-hmm. So like pre-Colleen, who was she? What was her form? What was her name? Did she have a name? And then we talked about how they took me in and shod my feet and taught me prayers for chastity and said my name would be Colleen, so that she doesn't have a choice in her name. And it wasn't even like she was gifted a name. Someone just said, you are Colleen. And with that, like you said, by being given this name that means woman, she is given a form, and she is not given, she has it like thrusted upon her life, her form, her name. And then what choice does she really have in any of that?
Yeah.
And then we talked about in Colleen to the gray and sloping shouldered thing.
Yes.
And then we talked about he who can easily curve himself against the sky. Mm. So we talked about naming a lot in that episode, not only for Colleen, but like I like that now you tied naming to you tied forming to non-human things, because in Colleen we are tying it to seals or narwhals or these other named things.
And the line between the sky and the water too, because the narwhal is named he who easily can curve himself against the sky. And so it's this like freedom in being able to navigate maybe that line more easily, more freely. The freedom of the water, because it's that's a whole theme, but also just like the freedom of forming oneself against the skyline. There's something that seems really diversy about that that I'm not able to nicely articulate there, but I am fascinated by that now that we've gotten sort of deep into those questions on this album, on this song in particular.
There's also this conversation between the sailor and Colleen wherein he says, I would not speak your name in this place, and if I were to try, then the wind, I swear, would rise to tear you clean from me without a trace. Mm-hmm. So again, this idea that like naming something changes its form.
Yeah. Yeah, super, super, super cool. I love that. Naming something changes its form. It has this power. Which makes me think, I don't know how to articulate this at all, but bear with me. Maybe instead of asking the question, how do you choose your form? How do you choose your name? She's not asking like, what reasons should we take into consideration when determining what form we're going to take, or when deciding what form we're going to take, or what name is going to be our name? But rather she's asking like, wait, I missed the choice. How do you choose this? Like, how do I get to be the person? Yeah. How do I get to be the person who makes these decisions? How do you choose it? Like, I didn't know that there was a time when we got to choose this. And so she's asking like, how can we take control of this? How can we have power over this? Yes. Yes, exactly. How can we have some agency in this process? It's this bucking against the way that things are that I feel like we see very strongly in You Will Not Take My Heart Alive coming up, this like bucking against the way that things are, which I can make a little bit more sense of.
Yeah, it's kind of like I missed the boat. Like, how did I end up here?
Yeah.
When, where, how was there ever a choice, and how can I get back to that if possible?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and this call for, like, it's almost like articulating then on this interpretation a need for self-determination, right? Like, so yeah, we have to abide by the roles that we're given here, but like, we have to be able to determine for ourselves what roles those are going to be.
Yeah, if the choice is a shitty one, if you're only giving me three of these, yeah, at least give me that choice.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. I feel slightly better about that interpretation.
I feel slightly worse. So I
don't know. The annotation on Genius, I'll just quickly read. So people are bound to the roles that society has set for them. The asking of questions such as how one can choose a name or a life are seemingly pointless, as these things are beyond our control, much in the same way that we cannot choose the role that society establishes for us. By linking the two, the narrator reinforces the high level of skepticism she feels towards possibly finding a solution for her unrequited love, as she is forced to play her role as a woman on the pier waiting for the diver's return. Nevertheless, there still exists the thin hope that due to the infinite possibilities that the universe presents in the form of the eternal return, if one keeps striving towards a certain end, instead of waiting patiently at the pier, you could eventually reach the goal that you seek. I kind of want to push back upon the idea that this song is about unrequited love. I've seen that in a couple places, and I'm not saying it's not. Yeah, I'm not saying that it's not. Like, maybe it is. It just seems to me more like the question of whether he loves her is almost irrelevant.
Yeah.
Because it just seems to be much more about like missed connections and like the impossibility of having an experiential overlap with the person that you're in love with.
Yes.
If that person is a different gender.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree with that. It's that inability to translate information between these different forms, right?
Yeah. So like even in the best scenario where you guys are both madly in love with each other, the motivations that compel each of the different parties to act and the things that are deemed valuable by each of those different genders, forms. I guess. Yeah, forms, yeah. Exactly, are different. Okay, all right. So I'm sorry that you feel worse about this.
I think I just feel more confused. I don't know if it's a worse or better direction, but it's just a confused spot.
More balls are up in the air now.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So were we done with this verse?
I think we did the best we can.
Yeah, I think so too. Moving on, I suppose.
Moving right along, as we do very quickly and in an organized fashion on this podcast.
The next verse I also find not vexing in the sense that it's angering me, but confusing. So she sings, "And in an infinite capsize, colon, like a bull tearing down the coast, double hulls bearing double masts, I don't know if you loved me most, but you loved me last."
Okay, so I think when I first approached this verse, I didn't understand why a bull was tearing down the coast.
Well, that, like, that's where I'm at.
An animal.
Help me.
So this is what Google helps me with. So this, I think this is a metaphorical bull, and the metaphorical bull is this giant ass ship. I'm just going to open my screenshots because I was looking at these things on my phone yesterday. So if a boat has a double hull, it means that it's just like I'm showing Nikki on Zoom. It just means that there's like this extra layer.
This like insulation kind of?
Like insulation, so that if shit gets messed up, the oil or whatever, the liquid it's carrying inside doesn't leak to the outside.
Okay.
So it's just like extra strong, extra secure. And then if it has a double mast, that means that it has like it's super fast, I think, that it just has like more power behind it. Let's double check that double mast boat. I think it's called a schooner. There are several sailboats with two masts. The most common ones include a yawl, a ketch, a schooner, and a brig.
Okay.
Oh my god, all of the terminology related to sailing is wild. A yawl is one of the most common types of two-mast sailboats. It has two masts, a mizzen mast and a main mast. What the fuck? Who came up with mizzen mast?
I don't know.
Double Z, double Z. That's wild.
The whole language around like anything like saily reminds me of military language where I just feel immediately like out of sorts. Like I'm like, I don't know what the fuck anybody's talking about.
So the image that I get from this verse is this like strong ass ship tearing down the coast. Why? I don't know.
So the bull being the ship.
Yes. Okay. Because it has its double masts. It has its double hull. It is like fast and invincible and strong. But is it also in an infinite capsize? Like, or are we comparing the... Did we read the verse? Did you read the verse?
Yes, I read the verse.
Okay,
yeah.
Good job. Okay. And in an infinite capsize. So we're comparing, we have like us, so we're comparing the infinite capsize to this bull tearing down the coast.
Right.
But then are we also comparing this last question or this last statement? I don't know if you loved me most, but you loved me last. To me, this looks like this like incredibly strong and powerful ship infinitely like spinning and sinking, and we're tying it to this question of like love. and how much you love someone. And the last part I'm stuck on, but you loved me last.
Oh my gosh.
This like spiraling question of like a worry spiral. Like, yeah. I know I'm somewhere in your train of women you loved, but like where exactly I am and like how much you did love me. You did love me is a question. I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, dude, I can't do this first. Like, I have no idea. I have no idea. I like your theories. I like your thoughts. Like, I don't know what it means for something to infinitely capsize. Like, it sinks and sinks and sinks forever, or it keeps flipping forever.
Okay. Sorry, I'm just going to make sure this is still recording. It looks like it is. Okay. Okay, so capsize can mean a few different things. Excellent. Too.
Okay.
Capsize can mean like we are imagining a boat that is overturned in the water, like the boat capsized in heavy seas. But it can also be, oh shit, where was it? It can also be, I think, like a worry to find capsize. It can also be in relate, like the examples I saw were like, to cause her to overturn. So it can also be in reference to like a relationship, like their relationship was capsized, like by
upended.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Great synonym. Or like your career can be capsized.
Yeah.
And then the etymology of capsized was cool too, because diving. Because in Spanish, it comes from cabo or chapuzar, which is to dive or duck. So the diving or ducking of the head of a ship. So there's like movement there. Yeah. For sure.
Interesting. So yeah, I don't know whether to picture this infinite capsize as being like, look, you've overturned and like you're sinking because you're taking on water. And so the infinite capsize is like you just keep moving downward for forever. Or if it's just that like boats are doomed to capsize. And so like it's just going to like eventually keep turning over. Like boats are going to continue to sink for forever. Or what exactly? And why is the bull tearing it down the coast? Oh, God, I don't know. I don't understand any of this. Yeah, I really struggle with this verse. I'm sorry that I have a podcast where I'm supposed to explain this because I don't know what to say.
I'm sorry. Okay, new theory.
Okay.
We know our narrator, we know our woman on the shore is tied to the shore, right? So then maybe we can imagine her as the bull tearing down the coast. And so when I think of a bull, I think of full of emotion, right? Either like angry or frustrated or whatever. And is it that we're following along the coast? Is it that we're following the diver as he is in the water? Or is it that we're following the sailor in the sea or in the sky? And that there's a lot of like emotion tied to the stuckness there.
Interesting. Okay, I like that. So,
because we're stuck on the coast, right? A bull tearing down the coast.
Yeah.
Tearing, I'm imagining, is running, but it might not be.
And the coast is sort of a blurring of the line between sea and shore, right? It's like both simultaneously.
Yeah,
it's
that weird in between space.
Yeah, it's the weird in between. Yeah, exactly. So, like, I like that it's like almost literally a common ground, right, between the two opposing forces that we've seen throughout the song. Okay, so I can handle that. And so I don't know what to make of any of this, but well, first, okay, I'm stuck on the question about why a bull. I am stuck on it. I can't move past it. But I want to. I want to let that shit go. I saw that a bull boat is a thing. So I think a bull boat is also – it's a small, useful boat made by Indians and frontiersmen, made by covering a skeletal wooden frame with a buffalo hide. It is used for traveling and for fishing. And so it has a history grounded in like the Hudson Bay Company visits and trades and stuff like that, like fur trade stuff. Okay, so there's that.
So
that
1790, so it was like a boat produced by indigenous peoples in many, many places around the world. It looks like it resembles one, like a Welsh creation, one in Ireland and Scotland, but also like an Iraqi and Mesopotamian kind of boat. So like this like common traditional way to fish.
Okay.
I'm assuming.
Okay.
But also travel.
This is Nikki cutting in with just a quick editing note here. So after this, Sam and I for like 20 minutes tried to figure out what the fuck bulls have to do with anything. And we had a time, a hard time, a floundery time, which might give some context to what I'm about to say right now. Maybe what we should do is just say, put a pin in the bull symbolism. We'll come back to it in the next episode and then start there.
Sure.
Okay. Is that all right with you?
Yeah. This is a really cool article.
It is, but it's insane. There's like so
many. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay. So we got a little lost on our bull symbolism tangents here. What we're going to do is not talk about it right now. Come back to it at the beginning of next episode. Finish the rest of this verse because there's a lot of stuff we do want to get to, and we'll start with bull symbolism next time. We've abandoned this verse. We've never in a hopeless endeavor first. We are abandoning the verse in the middle of the analysis. We need some time with it.
Yeah, that's very fair. Okay.
All right. Sorry, guys. We'll be back next week with...
We did make it through one. We made it through one verse. So, like, I hope we're not leaving you stranded.
I hope we're not... Oh, yes. Before we go, there's another... Okay. Just to step away from verses and to, like, get a fresh taste in our mouths before we leave people on this uncertain note.
Ready.
So, right now I'm editing... a podcast series that my partner is doing with his, it used to be his advisor, Paul Bloom, who is a brilliant psychologist. And they're doing this new podcast together called Psych. And it's sort of like this overview of like just sort of basic concepts in psychology, but they're both really smart and psychologists themselves. And so they have these cool in-depth discussions about it. So I'm editing the podcasts for them. And that, in doing so, I was freaking out, wanting to text Sam, but then holding off because I just wanted to, like, let you guys in on the conversation, too. But there's this fucking insane psychology experiment when it comes to the perception of time in dreams that I thought was so cool that I wanted to mention to you. So there's apparently... The people had this question of like, why, like, what is the perception of time not only across different species, but also across, or like also how do humans perceive time differently in dreams than we do in waking life? Because there's this assumption that time goes really slowly in dreams. Because like, you know, when you wake up and you're like, oh my God, I feel like I just had like this entire saga, like adventure in my dream. And so they figured out this cool way of measuring at least small increments. So what they would do to try to gauge what people's perception of time would be like in dreams is they got people who could lucid dream. So to lucid dream, right, being like they were aware that they were dreaming as they were dreaming. And they could communicate to the people who were having lucid dreams. And they would say, without the person waking up, they would say, okay, now count to 10. And like, I forget if it was like blink or like move your eye when you've counted to 10. So like on the count of three, start counting to 10. One, two, three, go. And the person would count to 10 in their dream and then like indicate that they were done counting to 10. And it turns out that they were like just as good as awake people at gauging how much time had passed.
Whoa.
Isn't that cool? Like a cool way of measuring what at least 10 seconds would be like for someone who's lucid dreaming in particular.
That is really cool because I would have assumed that it would be faster because you have all of these experiences in a short, seemingly short amount of time.
Yeah.
Makes me want to learn how to lucid dream.
Dude, me too. I want to learn how lucid. Have you ever had a lucid dream?
I don't think so. I think I've had like the, if I have, it's been very short. I think if I have, it's always been like, oh, I'm dreaming and I realized it and I'm awake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I used to lucid dream all the time as a kid, like by accident. It would just happen. And I would get a little bit stuck. Like I'd be like, okay, wake up, wake up. Like I'd have to like tell myself, I don't know why I wanted to wake up, but I remember chanting, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up, until I'd wake up. But I lost that ability at some point and I want to regain it. That'd be really cool.
Okay. Well, that's a fun experiment.
I thought it was so cool and just like very – a very like creative way to try to answer this like seemingly intractable question of what time is like in dreams.
I love that. And the podcast isn't up yet.
No, it's not up yet. No, no. Okay.
I just want to subscribe to
it. Oh, that's so sweet. No, I will let people know when it's up because it's going to be super interesting. And there were a bunch of Joanna connections I wanted to make because obviously I infused. I like put Joanna connections where there aren't any, but I'll let you guys know when that podcast is up. All right. Anyways.
Cool.
Thank you guys so much for bearing with us and our fucking stumbling through part four of Divers. Don't feel good about that last verse. Feel good about the rest of it though, at least decently. Check out our Patreon. There you can find early episode releases and bonus episodes. Sam and I are about to record another bonus episode to post right away, so check that out. It's linked in the show notes, but also it's just patreon.com/ahopelessendeavor. There's a Facebook group, A Hopeless Endeavor, joining some podcast. Sam does a bang-up job running our Instagram, A Hopeless Endeavor Podcast. Tell us about the Instagram, Sam.
There's a link tree to all of the things that in our bio, link in our bio to all the things Nikki mentioned. Yeah, you can send us emails, you can send us DMs, you can post on our Facebook group if you have things to say, especially about bulls and lucid dreaming. Would love to hear.
Love to hear
about those. Do you lucid dream? Tell us. What do you do?
Yeah, let us know. Okay. The email is ahopelessendeavor@gmail.com.
It is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is that it?
That's it. All right. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for
Thank
being
you
here.
For listening.
Yeah. We'll see you next week with part five of Divers.
I love you. Goodbye. Bye.